Today on Rambling About Cars, we've got mini trucks, we've got minivans, we've got SUVs, we've got station wagons, we've got everything you could possibly want, and we might even have some spicy takes in the process, so let's roll. It's podcast time. I am Christopher Smith and Mr. Chris Bruce across the way. We are here. It's Wednesday. We're welcoming everybody into the live discussion, the live chat, and if you can't catch us live, email us podcast at motorone.com. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Sorry. you took the words out of my mouth. Yeah. Should we just get started with news since there's so much to talk about? Or have you done any cool car stuff that you want to tell the folks?
I did yank the sail panels off of the Subaru because they were faded on the side. I finally did that.
Are you repainting them or what's the plan?
Oh yeah, I yanked them off over the weekend, scuffed them down, repainted them. Now I have some new badges, some all-wheel drive badges to put back on there. I'm just trying to spiff up the old Subaru a little bit. Cool. Got some gold striping around the window, so I'm like Smokey and the Bandit. If Smokey and the Bandit drove a Subaru Forester without a turbo, which nobody's getting away from Buford T. Justice in that thing.
That era probably makes 160.
Yeah, I think it's right around 160. Well, I mean, which isn't bad for a small naturally aspirated four cylinder from 20 years ago, and it feels like it still has all its power. So it's all right.
Nothing to be too mad about.
Join us on the chat, Motor1.com Facebook, Motor1.com Twitter, Motor1 on YouTube. We're getting some people in right now. Ted Adam Green, our longtime listener, dropped us a message. We got Viper, the Viper underscore the best G. What's up, Group FBC? What's up? Good morning. It is the longest day of the year.
It is. It's summer solstice.
For those of us in the Northern Hemisphere, for those in the Southern, it's the shortest.
It's true. I you know what? I honestly hadn't thought about that. I hadn't thought about it that way, but you're absolutely right.
Absolutely true. It's that point where, I mean, for us in the Northern part, it's just going to get worse from here. I'm sorry. I'll be Debbie Downer today. It's only going to get worse from here.
Well, you gave us a fantastic segue to our first thing, because this is a vehicle that did debut in the Southern Hemisphere and might, we don't know for sure yet, but it might eventually come to the Northern Hemisphere.
Oh, I thought you were going to say, here's something that's gotten worse. And I thought I knew where you were going, but you surprised me. Yes. Southern Hemisphere. What do we got here, Bruce?
So the Ram Rampage finally debuted. It is debuting in Brazil. It's an interesting vehicle, though. Usually, like, okay, it's a Brazilian pickup, we wouldn't really talk about it, but this one's a little bit something special because they got a lot of engineering help from the United States, from the mm-hmm. U.S. engineers at Ram, who obviously have, you know, a long history of building pickups. So, if you want some input, you might as well go to engineers who have done it year after year after year to get some help with that. We keep hearing like rumors and stuff like that maybe Ram might sell it here too. Things keep like percolating up that like maybe they might sell it here. So, for those reasons, it's worth talking about. I think it's a small truck. We should say, so it rides on Stellantis's small wide 4x4 platform.
And that's the same as you get with the Alfa Romeo Tonale,
Jeep Compass and Jeep Renegade. So this is a small vehicle, but it doesn't look like a small vehicle in photos. It looks kind of deceptively large, in my opinion.
Honestly, when I look at the photos, I mean, how many times have we, over the last several years, Bruce, have we talked about, okay, there's the Ford Maverick, there's the Hyundai Santa Cruz, slightly larger, you have the Chevrolet Colorado GMC Canyon, Ram has nothing. And we keep looking in other markets, especially in South America, where you had like the Fiat Toros and like the Ram 800. And those trucks looked like they were native to those markets. It's just differences in styling.
Right.
This Rampage looks like it could be sitting at the Ram dealership down the street from me right now.
Yeah, it would fit in fine next to totally. A Ram 1500.
Yep. Yeah, and I think that's a huge clue right there. I think it's a huge clue.
Yeah, let's give the folks, let's tell them. So this is Brazilian market information. So to understand that, this is not, we don't even know if it's coming here yet. So don't necessarily say, oh, this is exactly what it would be in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So when automakers do this type of stuff, they're going to tweak it from market to market, again, assuming it comes here.
Yep.
So the base engine in Brazil is a 2-liter turbo diesel that makes 170 horsepower, 280 pound-feet of torque. And then the upgrade engine is the 2-liter Hurricane turbocharged 4-cylinder, which we're kind of familiar with. And this application makes 272 horsepower, 295 pound-feet of torque.
Mm-hmm. And, whatever you get, it's connected to a 9-speed automatic transmission. What I like, I mean, they come right out of the gate here in Brazilian market. You've got the Rebel and you've got an RT. Again, those are trims we're very familiar with in North America, coming at you right off the bat here. The RT with the Hurricane with the gas engine, 0 to 62, 100 kilometers an hour, 6.9 seconds. And it sits almost a half an inch lower than the Rebel. And there's also the Laramie trim. So again, these are all trims that we're familiar with in North America. The styling wouldn't be out of place in North America. We've seen it testing in North America. We know that there was considerable input from the Stellantis folks in North America. Do I sound repetitive? I mean, I have to think, and again, this is unfounded. We don't have any direct evidence, but holy potatoes, this points in the direction of coming to North America. And at this point, I think Ram would be foolish not to. Now, we say nothing's confirmed. There have been quite a few rumors, fairly substantial sounding rumors that, okay, Ram has showed this to dealers in North America. Some of the rumors have said that, yeah, the dealers were told, but it's all, nothing is official at this point. But
right,
man, when I look at this thing, it's like, just flip the switch and go. with the RT trim, I mean, that's, and with 272 horsepower, that'll be right there with the higher trim levels of the Maverick, right there with the higher trim levels of the Santa Cruz.
So we have the payload ratings, mm-hmm. and I just wanted to see. So a Maverick payload can be between 1,512 and 1,564 pounds. For this thing, it's, with the diesel payload for the bed is 2,238 pounds, and with the Hurricane turbocharged 4-cylinder is 1,653 pounds. So, mm-hmm. Even that, so it's already beating the Maverick. Just, you know, if you're a PR person or a marketing person, you can immediately say, you know,
best in class, all of this stuff. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
So just really compelling, interesting vehicle. Surprised for watchers out there. I have not heard a thing from you folks. So I'm going to put this in the chat. What do you think of the Rampage? And we should say, for anyone out here who's not aware of it, this is not the first time there has been a Rampage truck. Granted, nope. The first time around, it was called the Dodge Rampage. Mm-hmm. But yeah, back in the 80s, they had a small
truck. Back in the 80s, it was very small. It was based back then on the little Dodge, just the little Dodge Charger, not like the cool Dodge Charger that you've seen in Fast and Furious. I'm talking about the little front wheel drive one that, for the record, I think is cool. Also a little, like a little Shelby Charger from the 80s with a 2.2 turbo 4 turning the front mm-hmm. wheels. That's a cool little ride, but it was based on that. So you just had, I mean, you basically had the front of that little front wheel drive Charger with a little bit of a bed in the back. And that was the original Rampage. This one obviously certainly has all of the truck looks for Ram. It is though the platform. I mean, this isn't a body on frame vehicle, and we know how much Ram kind of likes to tout the body on frame structure. And we've heard, I mean, Bruce, you remember when the Maverick came out, just some of the comments we were seeing in our articles and then on social, people say, oh, that's not a real truck because it doesn't have a proper frame underneath. So it'll be interesting to see how this might be received by Ram buyers.
The thing is, though, people said that, and now I see Mavericks all the time.
Yep.
So it hasn't dissuaded that many people from buying it. Smith, I just noticed this. Does the... Wait. I literally just noticed this. Does that taillight look like the American flag to you, or is that just me?
Holy cow, Bruce. Did you just uncover an Easter egg?
I don't know.
We're looking at this. We got our slideshow going. You can see it on YouTube. You can see it on Facebook. See it on Twitter. I need to jump over to the article and take a closer look at this, Bruce. That does kind of look like an American flag, doesn't it?
I who knows if that's on purpose or an accident or what, but I literally, first time I'm seeing that. So, because
2, 3, 4, 5. I'm trying to zoom in so I can count the stripes. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. It technically doesn't have all of the stripes. Well, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Yeah, it technically doesn't have all of the stripes.
Okay.
But that is an astute observation, and you're catching this. Ramblers, everybody listening out there, you're catching this in real time. We just stumbled upon this.
It's interesting. So, you know,
that's a super interesting. And the way the reverse light is in there to make it look like a checkered background.
Like yeah.
Wow.
But anyway,
possibly another clue. I don't know. We might have to write about this again.
That we don't know, but man, does things point in the right direction for him to sell it in the U.S. So we'll have to wait and see. But still, an interesting vehicle. Regardless, interesting that it has that. It's being so the Brazilian version is being built in Brazil, but it does have that input from the American engineers. So just all around cool. But I think that's enough Rampage talk.
Yeah. Well, before we go on, D Santos comment says that's one of the 5 Easter eggs they put on the Rampage. Now, I didn't get a chance to look in depth at any of the press releases since this is in the Brazilian market. So that it could very well be. I mean, it sounds like it might have been intentional from the get go. Okay. If nothing else, to show that there was involvement from Stellantis engineers design team in North America. And I think Ram said there was like 800 engineers involved on the project. Mm-hmm. Just a big effort to make a properly good looking, well crafted small truck. So well done, Brazil. I would love to see it in North America.
Yeah. So I think if you don't mind, Smith, I think we should do the Toyota special editions next, since that's still so fresh. Are you good with that?
I am good with that. And again, this is very fresh because Bruce and I were talking about this just before we started broadcasting. This just came out like an hour and a half ago.
Yeah. So the embargo on this dropped at 6 p.m. These vehicles that we're going to be talking about now. So this is essentially brand new information. And that is that there are two special editions and one carry forward update type thing from Toyota, from their performance cars coming to the United States. So let's start with, I guess, the biggest one first, and then we'll go to the special editions. Does that sound good?
That sounds good. So you want to start with the Supra?
Yeah. Oh, I was going to start with GR Corolla, but let's
start with GR Corolla. Because honestly, if it comes down to Supra or GR86 or GR Corolla, I'm taking GR Corolla.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yes.
Because I like my BMWs to wear BMW badges, damn it. And I like my Subarus to wear Subaru badges, damn it.
Okay, well.
I told you some spicy takes, maybe.
I guess so. But yeah, so the big news is that the GR Corolla Circuit Edition is back. Mm-hmm. And as I was talking to you fine folks, I closed my tab, so gotta get that back open. But So the Circuit Edition was the middle child in the lineup. There was the base, which I believe they called the core. There was the Circuit Edition, and then there was the Maritzo. And so Jeff Perez, he actually took some of the photos that you're looking at. According to him, it sounds like the Maritzo might be dead, maybe, possibly. So that would make the Circuit the new range topper.
And he makes a good point, too, in his debut article, which you can go see over at MotorOne.com. The Circuit Edition kind of created nice middle ground. It gave people some more of the desirable features that they wanted over the base. But the Maurizio was super exclusive, super expensive. Well,
I mean, like 200 of them,
they were pretty rare. So it's good that the Circuit Edition is back. I mean, nothing is different under the skin. It's still the overachieving turbo 1.6 liter three cylinder, 300 horsepower, 273 pound feet of torque, 6-speed manual transmission, all wheel drive. It's the rally fighter that you know and love. And let's talk for a minute about that blue paint job. Woo.
Oh, well, real quick, I wanted to say, we were talking about the Maritzo Edition. One thing that makes the 2024 GR Circuit Edition special is that it gets the same 18-inch BBS forged aluminum wheels that the Maritzo Edition last year had.
Yep.
And so now they come on the Circuit Edition. So making those more accessible. But yeah, let's talk about the blue flame paint.
Blue flame. Yeah, I am just a sucker for a really bright kind of electric blue. It's probably my choice color on a car. And I think this looks fantastic here, especially with the new BBS wheels. It does it for me on all levels.
Yeah. And the rear spoiler is now larger than last year. So slightly different spoiler, and that's gloss black at the back. So cool looking stuff there. And then didn't they do something on the inside? Let me double check. Okay.
You get some blue stitching on the inside, some blue contrast stitching, just a little more blue on the inside. Just to go with the lot more blue on the outside.
Yeah.
And we don't have any pricing info yet as well.
No.
But I mean, we can say that last year's model was, I think, just shy of 37 grand.
It was.
That's with destination fee included. And there are only going to be 1,600 of the Circuit Editions built this year. So this is going to be a little limited too.
But we could kind of take it as good news. So we should say Toyota confirmed the Circuit Edition was coming back in February, but we didn't have any of these details, like about the wheels and the color. All of that is new. But at that time, they said they were planning on building 1,500 of them for the U.S. So apparently someone decided it was popular enough. We're going to build 100 more. So that's something.
Yeah, we're getting 100 more. Hey, we'll take it.
Still wish... Group of FBC mentions the blue stripe on the shifter. Mm-hmm. So yeah, just Circuit Edition made better, not significantly better, they added 200 horsepower or something like that, but some cool new color, new wheels, bigger spoiler, blue interior.
Why so blue, Toyota? That's just the silly thing that I have to say. Why so blue?
Well, now let's talk about the two other special editions. And that is, so the first one is we're going to be talking about is the Toyota Supra 45th Anniversary Edition. And basically the biggest thing going with this is that it gets a special color that is called Mican Orange, I believe is how you pronounce it. M-I-K-N. It is apparently the Japanese word for orange, as in the fruit. And now you folks can see it, and it's orange. Like,
I mean, it's orange, but what really does it for me on this is the orange with the stripe on the side. That's such a great looking combo on here with the superscript and the stripe on the side. This could be the best looking BMW I've seen in a while. I know.
I'm beating
that dead horse.
And Jeff mentions so obviously he was with Toyota. I don't know if they actually told him this or just an impression he got, but he wonders if maybe this color wasn't at least a little bit inspired by Paul Walker's Supra from Fast and the Furious. Maybe.
Yeah. I mean, he says they didn't admit anything. Possibly. And we did see an orange Supra in not the most recent Fast and Furious, but the one prior. So, I mean, there's a little bit of history there. Yeah. But I mean, just the orange, I mean, orange and black is a good combo, generally speaking. Yes. Right. And I think it really works on here. The stripe, the black 19 inch wheels.
We should also mention that the wing is the another new piece that you wouldn't get on any other Supra. So special color, wing, really good color combo, though. So that is the 45th anniversary edition.
No mechanical changes. So, I mean, we'll just remind everybody. I mean, the Supra 3.0, it already has, it's the 3 liter inline six. You know it, 382 horsepower, 368 pound feet of torque. It's a great sounding car. It's a great driving car. I won't insert another BMW joke because I've overdone it here already. But
well, now you can make a Subaru joke, I guess.
It's a great looking. Yeah, we can go on from that to Toyota's other sports car from another mother, the Toyota GR86 Torino edition. Yep. And you can probably guess what the Torino edition is all about.
Well, if you were into cars in the late 90s, you definitely can. And
yeah, of course, we're talking about the Sprinter Torino, the AE86, just the little hot hatch that became a favorite in the drift scene, starring in Initial D, the anime. I've only seen like half of one of those episodes, and I feel like as a car person, I feel a little ashamed of that.
Okay. I was into it for a point. It was nice to see cars in anime. Like, that was good. Mm-hmm. The manga is actually pretty good too. It essentially, you could almost like compare it to like Dragon Ball Z or something like that, where there's just a villain. There's always a new villain, but it's always a car, you know.
And they, well, I won't say this car is villainous. Ooh, how about that segue? But I mean, you do get a graphics package, so white with a black graphics package on the outside, Torino badges, front and rear
lots
bumpers,
of Torino badges.
Lots of Torino badges. But it's not just an appearance package. They do tweak the suspension. You do get upgraded brakes. There's some active safety systems that are new for 2024. And this is a pretty limited edition. You're getting, while you're getting 900 examples of the Supra Anniversary Edition, and there are only 860 of the GR86 Torinos coming.
Yep. So... you won't see
no word on pricing yet, but yeah, if we sound a little disconjointed here, it's because we're learning about this along with you, because I mean, this news just broke within the last hour and a half.
And also, you know, they're special editions. There's only so much you can say about a white car with black stripes. It's cool. I feel tacky saying this because, you know, the fact that it's basically like the Initial D edition is kind of hokey, but I really like the way this looks. So
I like the way both of them look. And I would love to hear some feedback from the Ramblers out there on your take. I mean, we're cracking some jokes here because I mean, obviously the Supra had a lot of involvement with BMW. The GR86 has a lot of involvement with Subaru. I mean, how do you feel about these special edition Toyotas going to cars that aren't entirely Toyotas? I don't mind one tiny bit, but I know I read the internet, Bruce. I see the social people chatting away too, and commenting, and I know that, I mean, the AE86, man, there are a lot of people out there that are like, you don't mess with my AE86. So here the legacy is being carried on with the GR86, which is a cool car. I mean, I would like to hear some of the some feedback from the Ramblers out there. If you can't catch us live here, email us, podcast@moto1.com.
But some special edition Toyotas coming down the pike, coming this later this year. You know,
We'll have more information to come on pricing. None of that's announced just
none
yet.
None of that's available for any of these yet. Yeah. We'll just have to wait and see. So next up, let's talk about a wagon. FBC has a comment. Fairly underwhelming overall. I'm fine with the BMW Subaru Lynx, as without it, those cars wouldn't exist. He's right. True. You know,
Well, but
he's right.
But would they? I mean, you would just call it the BMW Z4 and the.
Yeah, but the Supra looks nothing like the Z4. The BRZ GR86 thing, that's a bit different. Yeah. But
yep.
They look nothing alike. Yeah, they share underpinnings and some infotainment stuff and whatnot. But at least it's an interesting looking car, and it is different. So it just makes me bristle a little bit when people say they're the same thing, because they're not quite the same thing.
They're not quite the same thing. Under the skin, there's a lot of similarities.
Under the skin, yeah, I can't fight you there.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's
move on to something that's all one automaker.
That's right. And this is another one that we kind of have to add a bit of story to beyond just what's here. And we'll get to that at the end. So the 2024 Mercedes-Benz E-Class Estate debuted. You might remember, what was it, 2-3 weeks ago, we were talking about the new E-Class sedan.
Yep.
And now the Estate wagon is here. And as you'd expect, that very, very similar vehicles, except this one has a longer roof and a hatchback. So you can, if you have children, you could take them in luxury in this thing, because it's got all the bells and whistles you could ever want in a car, really. And it's got a hatchback and a wagon, so you can stuff it full of stuff.
One thing interesting about the new E-Class wagon, I mean, for the longest time, you could get a little third row there in the back. That's no longer offered now. So comparisons with this, I know sometimes people would line up, well, hey, you could put 6 or 7 people in your SUV. I could put 6 or 7 people in my station wagon. Can't do it here. But there is still, I mean, you have gobs of space back there. 21.7 cubic feet with the rear seats in place. 64.6 cubic feet if you fold them down. There is the plug-in hybrid model that actually takes up a little bit of that space, because it has a fairly substantial battery that we'll talk about here in a little bit for a plug-in hybrid. But, I mean, that still takes it down to 63 cubic feet. There's a lot of space back in here. If you just aren't interested in an SUV, wagons, estates, they just aren't anywhere near as prevalent as they used to be. But it's nice to see Mercedes still giving it a go with the E-Class, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And so we should say this is exclusive to Europe, the Mercedes-Benz E-Class Estate. However, and this is what I was alluding to earlier, there was a filing with the EPA in the United States from Mercedes saying the E-Class All-Terrain was going to be coming to the United States. Now, that's not an official confirmation, but once you start filing government documents, we're pretty certain on this one. So while you're not going to be able to get this specific vehicle in the U.S., you will be able to get the one with additional body cladding, a higher ride height, a little bit more slightly, it's essentially the Audi Allroad equivalent of the Mercedes-Benz E-Class. So while we're talking about a European market vehicle right now, don't completely shut off, because you're basically going to be able to get all of this in the United States, just in a slightly different form coming up.
Slightly higher ride height. I would like to point out, I did bounce some emails back and forth with some Mercedes spokespeople, and they did confirm with me in that email directly, no E-Class wagon for North America. But they said, however, we have nothing to say yet on the all-terrain, more information forthcoming. So not a confirmation, but they made a clear delineation of no on the wagon, no comment on the all-terrain.
Right. That's okay. Just trust me. I was going to pull up the EPA thing, but I think we have established at this point that you folks can trust me.
I think the point's made.
But like the sedan, the E-Class wagon is available with that super expansive screen that you can even get a third screen for the passenger. And it's got that slick setup where the driver can't see what the passenger's looking at, so that person can be watching movies. Or I love the fact that Mercedes touts that Angry Birds is included, which is a game from the iPad that has to be 10 years old now, but they think the fact that you can play it in your car now is cool. But also it's got the 3 camera setup available, so you can use it for Zoom or certain video conferencing apps. Zoom is one of them, and it's only certain ones, but yeah. So just a bundle of tech that, you know, you can do stuff with.
Yep. They seem very oddly focused. It seems like every time we hear about the E-class, you could do Angry Birds or you can do, you know, you could do Zoom meetings. Hey, we get it, Mercedes. You're wanting to be modern. You're wanting to be tech. And yeah, you got the same thing in the wagon as you do in the sedan. They're just with a little more space in the back, right?
Yeah. It's that you mentioned that. I would like to see, because I haven't seen it yet, someone actually do a Zoom meeting from inside of an E-Class, because I wonder, because the ability that it touts is, so it's for the driver. You can't do it while you're driving, though. You have to stop and pull over and, you know, park. But theoretically, it should look better than you just, like, holding your phone up to your face, I would imagine. I would like to actually see someone do a meeting from an E-Class and see like what the video quality looks like and stuff.
Mm-hmm. And you know, I was just going through some of the comments. If you remember, Bruce, when the E-Class sedan debuted, it felt like there was just a trove of haters out there that thought it was just the most disgusting thing they've ever seen.
Yeah, I disagreed with those people, but but styling is subjective, so I guess I was wrong. But
I'm seeing some similarities there. Just going through some comments here right now, through our debut post, but it doesn't seem like it's quite as harsh this time around. Maybe people are just a little more used to it by now. I still think it's an attractive car. I don't mind the blackout treatment around the front to make it look a little bit more like the EQ cars. Hey, they're going for a little bit of symmetry there. And I've always liked the proportions of a wagon.
Same.
And this just does it for me. In Europe, you have the 2-liter turbo available, 204 horsepower, 236 pound-feet of torque. There's also the 2-liter diesel that gives you 197 horsepower, 325 pound-feet of torque. And then you can also get the 300E plug-in hybrid. That's the 2-liter turbo with a single electric motor. You get a combined output of 312 horsepower. But what we were alluding to earlier, that hybrid has a 25.4 kilowatt-hour battery. According to the admittedly generous European WLTP cycle, it's got a 62-mile electric-only range,
which is impressive for plug-in hybrid. Now, granted, like you said, WLTP is notoriously generous when it comes to EV ranges. So, if you did the EPA test, it would be less than that, but it wouldn't be, it wouldn't be half. It would, you know, it would still be pretty impressive. So,
right.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. The fact that, you can 62 miles is most people. That's not even a daily commute for most people. That means you would essentially drive to work and back and the motor would never turn on.
Yeah. And it's also worth pointing out the electric motor has an output of 129 horsepower in this. So, you're not going to be setting any speed records, but if you're just commuting down the highway back and 70, forth, just let the electric motor take you along. Right. We'll just say if in the world of the EPA here in the United States, if that range went down to 50 miles,
that's still
40 miles. That's still a substantial electric only range that I think would cover most people's daily commute right there. So you're running an EV without the worry of range anxiety, because once you reach that limit, you make sure you have gas in the tank and you just keep going. So I think that makes a little bit more sense to me right now than going a full EV, especially here in North America, where we're starting to see some legitimate questions on, okay, just how reliable is the electric infrastructure right now in terms of the various charging networks that are available, right? So, I've seen quite often, okay, well, plan to get to this charger. I got to this charger and it's not working. Go to this charger, it's not working, or go over here. And, so that could be a better longer term solution rather than just a short short term. I don't know. Am I crazy?
And here? We should say Mercedes apparently also confirmed that a diesel powered plug-in electric vehicle version will be coming later. And of course, there will obviously be AMG versions. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing is the new E63 is also expected to be a plug-in hybrid, making over 700 horsepower.
So, yeah, in this case, I don't think their plug-in hybrid is really aimed at...
Not in that case.
Let's get 62 miles of range. Let's get to 62 miles an hour in like a second and a half. That's
right.
While plastering the groceries to the back window, right?
Yeah, and the dog, and yeah, the kids, and who else, whatever else. So, so that is the new E-Class wagon. Smith, what are you feeling about talking about next? Because I'm pretty copacetic with either of these next two vehicles. So, where you at?
I think we gotta go for it, man. I think we gotta go to the vans.
Okay, weird van time.
I think we got to go weird van time. Are you ready, everybody? Remember a few weeks ago when we were talking about the Lexus LM? The Toyota versions are here. Say hello to the...
just as weird.
They look just as weird. Say hello to the Toyota Alphard and the Veilfire. Is that how you say that?
I want to say
Veilfire, Veil. Every time I see that, I just think Veilside. And it's like, no. It's not a tuner van.
See, part of me could wants be. To call it Veilfire, which is not how you say it. I think it's got to be Veilfire, but Veilfire just sounds suitably weird for these vans.
Well, Veilfire, Veilfire, that's just a cool name. I just want to drive that just for the name. Pull in, hey, what are you driving? Yeah, I'm in the Veilfire. What is that? Nobody would ever picture a six-seater minivan with the grill like the size of a 747.
Yeah, it's like a cow catcher off of a locomotive.
These are Toyota's minivans for the Japanese market. They are uniquely weird, and I've always had a thing for the uniquely weird, I guess.
Yeah.
But I mean let's talk a little bit about it. The Veilfire is really your more higher range performance model. Mm-hmm. You can get that with a 2.4 liter turbo four cylinder, 275 horsepower in that one. You can also get it with a 2.5 liter hybrid engine that's making 250 horsepower. It connects through a CVT or an 8-speed automatic transmission. The Alphard, you can only get the naturally aspirated 2.5 liter engine with 180 horsepower. So, I mean, neither one of them are really performance beasts, but I mean, no 275 horsepower. Really, yeah. 275 horsepower in a front wheel drive minivan. That's still going to be kind of fun.
But I just want to point out, as we look at these images, just the weird shapes of, like, look at the window line where it double back. I got to go back here a second. I'm going to pause this. Where it double backs on itself and then keeps going and then moves to this like weird fin section. Like, what?
Hey,
I want these designers to be making Toyotas for the US, because these guys are clearly,
if they're not
afraid to try new things.
Well, I mean, we've seen how the minivan segment has virtually dried up. I think there are more station wagons you can get now than minivans. I think you can, if you look around, yeah, I think you can still find more station wagon models than minivan. Maybe I'm wrong. If I am wrong, it's got to be close. So if you're going to jump into a segment that's almost non-existent, just own it, man. Make it your own. Toyota is being completely unapologetic here. I love this comment from Group FBC. Zorro would approve of that lower window line.
Like, look at the side of this thing. Like, what other vehicle in the world looks anything like that?
Nope, nothing. It has a distinctive styling. Whether you love it, whether you hate it, nobody's going to miss it. I think it's over the top enough to be cool in my book.
I agree.
I think Toyota has just decided, you know what? We're going to build this and we're just going to own it. We're going to make it wild. We're going to make it interesting. And if we sell 8,500, which I think is their target, they'll move forward. Toyota calls these luxury saloons, even though they're minivans. I mean, of course, saloon is associated with sedan.
Sure.
So, you know, that seems a little off there. It's like, just if you're going to style it like this, just own it, man. It's a minivan. It's a wild minivan. It's according to our press release, this is the first Toyota minivan that has powered side steps on both the side doors.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool little
feature. I love the way they titled that. On both sides now. Like, oh, okay.
Both sides.
Good for you, Toyota.
So if you need help getting in, you only get in on one side, right? But yeah, I mean, obviously we don't have a ton of information on these.
It's just, we brought them up because they look so just like nothing else in the world. Like,
they look wild. And I mean, our traffic numbers into the site tell us, hey, people are interested in this sort of thing. So once again, we're trying to keep a close eye on that and bring that over here to the podcast to help spread this along. One thing that's interesting to me, you won't find any 7-seat versions of either of these vans. They only do quad captain's chair. So your 2 seats in the front, your 2 captain seats there in the middle for the second row, and then another 2 seats for the third row. So the best you're going to get will be 6 passengers in here.
And I also want to point real quick. I want to point out this image here. You can see this is not like, oh, the minivan for taking your kids to soccer practice. Like, look at the back seats. Like, they have their own little pads on them on the armrest. Like,
yes,
these are luxury vehicles.
I'm glad you pointed that out, because I was about to make that point. I mean, we're calling these minivans because, I mean, they're not like a traditional full size van, but we're still talking about a 118-inch wheelbase. It's not a small vehicle. There's lots of room in there to stretch out. And I mean, there's plenty of luxury in there as well, right?
I mean, the pictures kind of say it themselves. Like, look at those chairs. Like, that's like really, really nice airplane seating. You know, you can see it's got the power thing for your thigh support. It's got, you know, big bolsters. It's got head support. Like, if you're riding in this, you are going to be a very comfortable passenger.
You will. And as far as what people think on the outside when they see you go by, let them think whatever they want.
Exactly.
If you're going to go wild, just own it. I mean, I guess you can make that same argument for some of BMW's current styling decisions, but I feel like they're like not trying to be wild. They're trying to be complex. And I feel like Toyota's just like, beep it, and just let's just have fun, right? I censored myself there.
But yeah, I think we've said all we can say about the Alphard and the Velfire.
Well, but let me mention one other thing.
Oh, obviously
these are for Japan.
This is
never.
Not replacing the Sienna.
Never seeing this in North America. But if it were, the pricing for the Alphard would range from $38,000 to $61,000.
Okay.
And, you know, translated from, you know, for current exchange rates from yen to US dollars, and the Velfire, $46,000 to $62,000. So
at the top of that range, that seems very reasonable for what I'm
looking at. Yes, doesn't it? When I saw those prices and I saw those figures, I thought, well, that doesn't sound too bad. I mean, if you were to get into the Velfire for about 46 or 50 grand, have something that has very distinctive styling, lots of luxury, decent power. Yeah.
Yeah. I
never see it here.
No, it won't happen, but nope. I like looking at it. So, and we're seeing here all the different like seating configurations, like those second row seats can move way all the way up or all the way back, depending on kind of what your needs are. So if you are carrying luggage, you can kind of make room for them. So,
and Group FBC, as questionable as the looks are, I'd much rather have distinctive vehicles like this than a sea of lookalike blandness. You mean like a silver or gray four-door crossover with sort of a slick roof. Yeah. I got to be honest. I might go that route as well. Just for the sake of being different. I don't know what that says about me, because it's like I'm holding up maybe the quality of the vehicle or what I want just for the sake of being different. But I think that matters to some people.
And real quick, I just want to throw, so this is their platform mate. This is the Lexus LM, which is the ultra luxury version. And you can see the styling is similar, but not the same. It doesn't have that same like really weird window line that goes yep. back and forth across the side. But also looking at this, you can see the family resemblance. So mm-hmm. if the Alphard and the Velfire aren't luxurious enough for you, there's the Lexus LM.
Yep. I feel like that's the box that the Toyota Supra comes in.
Sure.
Right. It's like, okay, here's the van. You pick up the van and, oh, okay. Here's anyways, me being a little silly. What else we got here, Bruce?
Well, this is the last thing that we had pulled up for tonight, but I think we might end up talking about some other stuff. We'll see. But yeah. The Land Rover, Range Rover Evoque. I always forget that.
Well, but it's JLR now. It's JLR.
Yeah. Oh, good point. It's Let's JLR. Be honest here. Everyone who talks about this, they call it the Evoque. It is yep. the branding is the Range Rover Evoque. Yes, but people just call it the Evoque. I can't. Other than mm-hmm. auto journalists and salespeople, I can't imagine a lot of people add the Range Rover bit to it. But mm-hmm. it got a refresh, and it got a fairly significant refresh, actually, especially in terms of tech.
Well, yeah, in terms of tech, I would say it's fairly substantial.
No, the looks are very similar.
Visually, it's like, I mean, literally, they changed the grill.
Yes.
The headlights are technically different.
Well, they're actually pretty majorly different. You can't really tell.
Right. They visually speaking, you would have to look really, really closely, literally, to see differences. There are three times more LED pixels things going on in the background there. So and they're all controlled individually. So I mean, these lights can direct beams of light in different directions, much more advanced than the previous model. And yeah, the grill. The previous Evoque, it's still the same shape. It's still the same size. It's just the internal structure.
The mesh pattern and the difference.
Yeah, yep. Like a rectangular mesh pattern in there now versus the hexagonal pattern that they had before.
Yeah, I guess it was.
And that's pretty much it. And I mean, we've had a couple spy photo sightings where it's like the whole front is camouflage. There was some camouflage wrap on the back, and it's like, nothing different at the back, just the small changes there in the front with the grill, with the headlights. But yeah, Bruce, you were talking about interior changes, and that's where things are a little more substantial.
Yeah. Also, while we're talking about big changes on the outside, there are new 21-inch wheel designs.
Oh, wait. That's not all, folks. I totally forgot about this. There are new colors.
There are.
Tribeca Blue, Corinthian Bronze, and Arios Gray.
I'm glad you pronounced that last one, because I was looking at that and I had no idea how to say that.
I have no idea if I said it right. So we could just shorten it to Blue, Bronze, and Gray.
Yeah. But like you said, there are bigger changes inside. So the infotainment screen now measures 11.4 inches. It's a touchscreen. Mm-hmm. It has a landscape orientation, and it's curved.
It's a curved screen, and it actually kind of sits out from the dash a little bit. So
yeah,
it sort of has that floating look.
Right. Which is kind of becoming all the rage these days, yeah. Especially in the premium car world. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you can see the screen there, you know, still a very kind of austere, I guess I would call it cabin. You know, mm-hmm. you look at it and there's not a lot of decoration or, you know, different colors or stuff like that. It's just a very kind of Spartan look to it.
Right. But, well, the new screen has led also to some changes with that center console there. There were mm-hmm. some controls previously on the center console. That's all pretty much relegated now to the touch screen controls. And that shift lever in the middle is also redesigned. So the result is a really minimalistic approach to the interior.
Yeah, I'm curious, Ramblers, what are your thoughts? If you've driven any vehicles that have gotten rid of physical buttons, what your feelings are? Because it seems, you know, it's a topic that we bring up a lot as to whether, you know, when you get rid of the buttons, you can have this super clean look like you're seeing here. But do you lose some of the functionality? Is, you know, it all has to come down to like the user experience and how things are set up. You know, if automakers start burying stuff in menus, which sometimes they do, then it just gets to be hell to work with.
Well, and
but some automakers are. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and to Range Rover's defense here on that, they have redesigned the software, the infotainment system. It's got the PV Pro 2, which I think just recently debuted, what, on the Range Rover SE?
Range Rover Sport?
The Sport, or the...
I think.
It's previously debuted, so it's now offered on the Evoque. And they do say that it's structured in a way where everything, I mean, you have some like some startup screens where everything that you are probably going to want to use quickly is already right there, ready to go. Obviously, this is new information. Just came out about 24 hours ago. So obviously we haven't had a chance to drive it yet, but
no one has.
I did find it interesting that they made it a point in their press release to point this out, that, hey, we have this updated infotainment system. Some of the common use items are going to be available right there in quickly accessible screens. And you can do some customization there as well. And of course, I mean, Apple CarPlay, Android Auto, wireless, all that good stuff. They do have upgraded camera systems. There's a 3D surround camera. There's a rear view camera. And then there's a ground view camera up front. They've upgraded their cabin filtration system. They made it a big point to mention this, that it's an upgraded system that is among the best in its class, which is, you know, smaller premium luxury SUVs. And we do, folks, we do have some pricing information for the United States.
We do. At least the base price.
Yep. The Evoque S starts at $49,900. That's your entry point. With destination added in, that's $51,075. The Dynamic SE is the only other trim that's available right now. That starts at $56,075. Again, that includes destination. No changes mechanically. There's just the 2-liter turbo. It's the only engine that you can get right now, 246 horsepower. And that's it for the Evoque. Honestly, when we saw the spy photos, I mean, it looked like it was going to be a fairly mild update. I was a little surprised that we didn't see a little bit more on the outside. But, I mean, it's not like it's an ugly, dated design to start with. I mean, no. can we agree that Range Rover, I mean, they make some of the most attractive SUVs you can get today?
I'm not fully going to co-sign that, but...
Okay, well, what looks better? What's a better looking SUV?
Ooh, now you're putting me on the spot.
What's Ramblers? Is there an SUV that looks better, that looks more attractive overall than, I mean, any of the Range Rovers, the Evoque, the Sport, any of them? I think they all just look fantastic from the outside. I've never been a huge fan of Range Rover quality over time. reliability, but I mean, from a look standpoint, I mean, I guess it depends on your aspect, right? Are you wanting more ruggedness in your SUV? Are you wanting just more sophistication? Are you wanting smoother lines? I mean, I guess it depends.
Honestly, I would take the Lexus GX that we were talking about last week over a Range Rover. Personally, that just my feeling.
Okay. I mean, it's, well, like I just said, what's your aspect? Where are you coming from? That's certainly a valid choice. It's different directions, right? I wouldn't call that. I love that new Lexus as well. I don't know that I would call it attractive in the same way of that I would say that I would classify the Range Rover. Do you understand what I'm saying? I'm having a little trouble putting my thoughts into words here because
I totally understand. I like a boxy design. I've just never been the biggest Land Rover fan, I guess. And so, yeah. If I actually had the money and actually had to spend it, would I buy a Land Rover? Probably not. They just don't necessarily push my buttons in there, you know, that way.
I mean, if I could get a new with an extended warranty, I'd go for it. But I'm so locked on, repair costs. Because I mean, I've known people that have had Land Rovers, Range Rovers before. Mm-hmm. Fantastic vehicles all around, but man, they seem to have some issues that would crop up from time to time. So, I mean, I guess you'd have two camps, right? You have your kind of rugged looking SUVs and maybe your more on-road sophisticated SUVs.
Sure.
Let's break it down into two categories like that.
Okay.
Now, what looks better in that sleek, sophisticated category than a Range Rover? And Ramblers, if you have any thoughts out there, now is the time. You catch us Motor One on YouTube, Motor One Com on Facebook, Motor One Com Twitter. I'm giving Bruce a little bit of time to try to figure this out, so I'm doing the speech here again. Email podcast at motorone.com because you can still send us your opinions even after the live show is over.
Yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe there is I try to think of that rugged off-road. So you know, kind of the poster child for. Well, I guess the Range Rover is actually the poster child for rugged off-road luxury. But I also immediately think of the Mercedes G-Class, which is, an even more kind of rugged take on things like that. Yeah, maybe you caught me. Maybe you got me on this one, that the Range Rover is pretty special in its class.
I mean, you could say XM.
No, I wouldn't.
I channeled Jeff Perez there for a second.
I could, but I wouldn't. Yeah, that's a good point. Smith, I want to spring something on you real quick because we've got a little bit of time left. I think there's a vehicle that's worth talking about that debuted this week. Mm-hmm. You and I haven't really talked about it. I read through the post. This is a vehicle that's really exciting to me, and it's interesting that we're finally seeing the production version, and that is the McMurty. I still am not clear whether it's Spierling or Spierling. It's got like a diacritic over the E, and then it's got an I next to
Spierling. I just call it like the super deformed Le Mans prototype.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it is. And so if you remember last year's Goodwood Festival of Speed, this thing just like stole all the headlines because it set a new course record up the hill climb there. And it kind of came in as this vehicle no one had really ever heard of. Not a lot of fanfare around it. They said, hey, we're going to try to break the record. And I wrote that story up. And if you go back and read it, I'm pretty dubious that this company I've never heard of is going to show up to Goodwood and break the record. And then they did it. And so, yes, we just found out today the production version has arrived. And this is it. And deliveries will start in 2025. And she's pretty pricey. Starting price, we only have UK starting price for now, but I'll give you the how it exchanges out. £820,000. Right now, that is $1.04 million.
And you know what? For reasons I can absolutely explain, that doesn't really shock me.
No,
I mean, we're talking about a niche specialty vehicle. And how many niche specialty vehicles have we seen in the last 10 years? And with what it did at Goodwood, they'll sell everyone. I feel confident they'll sell everyone.
Yeah, they're only making 100 of them.
Yep.
And this thing is tiny. It's only 135 inches long. They claim it can fit drivers up to 6 feet 7 inches. I would love to put our boss Seth Meersma in one of these, because I believe he is six five.
No, I think he's even taller than that. I think he's okay. like 6'6" or 6'7". I know when he and I are in the same room, we are like twins, like Arnold Schwarzenegger, like Danny DeVito. Yes. Where unfortunately I take the role of Danny DeVito, even though my weight loss program, I'm down just about 25 pounds. So,
good for you, man.
But there's still about a foot difference between me and Seth, and it's awesome and hilarious. But I don't have any trouble fitting into any car.
Exactly. Yeah.
None. Zero.
So this production version, it makes 1,000 horsepower. It's an electric. It makes 1,000 horsepower, and it weighs less than 2,200 pounds.
Yeah, there's a reason why it broke the record.
And it has a 60-kilowatt battery. It takes 20 minutes to charge, but they're saying it will do full-speed runs. It will do 10 laps of Silverstone, and then you got to stop for 20 minutes and recharge the battery. But just a fascinating vehicle that came out of nowhere yesterday. Came out of nowhere, and assuming the consumer version is as good as what they showed at Goodwood, just an absolutely astounding vehicle.
Yep. And I mean, I hate to put it in the same classification. Actually, I don't. I don't hate to put it in the same classification as the Toyota Vans we just talked about.
Oh, sure.
It doesn't look like anything else. I mean, when I say it's like a super deformed Le Mans prototype, if anybody's familiar with like the whole super deformed thing, it's almost like a caricature of, you know, a small caricature of something larger.
Right.
I mean, that's exactly what this feels like. And it has an awesomeness about it, but there's also like this weird, almost cuteness about it.
Exactly.
And it completely stands out. And then it comes up and it like knocks you out with an uppercut. Because it's insanely powerful, it's insanely light, and it's just, you don't expect it. There's nothing else like it, and it stands out for all the right reasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So more power to them. $1 million a pop, 100 of them coming. Delivery start in 2025. You know, I guess maybe we don't know, you know, businesses are weird. Maybe something happens and, you know, something falls through or something like that. But if they put this thing on the road and it does everything it promises, I mean, that's a world beater by any stretch of the imagination.
Mm-hmm. And Groove FBC, how the hell am I supposed to use that in a drive through? I mean, come on. Yeah, I would totally use it in a drive through. I don't care if I'd have to just open the door. I don't even think the
windows
there.
Go down. I guess you'd have to open the door up.
Just open the door or just you know, pull up and, you know, maybe pull up a little bit too far, open up the door, walk back. You know, you can find it. There is a video on YouTube somewhere of somebody taking a Sherp through a drive-through, right? You can get this through a drive-through.
Okay.
You can get it through a drive-through. Bruce, we've got a little bit of time here. Did you have anything else you wanted to go over?
No. Well, I thought we were going to talk about our upcoming guests.
Yes. Thank you for that neat segue. So July 5th.
Wait. Next week, we've got a guest locked in, and then let's do July 5th.
Okay. So you want to talk about next week?
Yeah, real quick. So next week, Motor1.com managing editor Brandon Turkus will be on the show. Mm-hmm. We'll be talking fun car stuff. And then, yes, July 5th, we have another special guest on the way.
July 5th, and I'm really excited about this because this is a book that I'm reading now. And, Bruce, you have the copy. I'm about a quarter way through it.
I got my copy Saturday. I have not started reading it yet.
I've got the book here. It's by Professor Wes Davis, and it's called American Journey on the Road with Henry Ford, Thomas Edison, and John Burroughs. And Professor Davis is going to join us here on July 5th. Mm-hmm. This is a very interesting book. I don't know that it chronicles the absolute first road trip ever taken by anybody, but we're talking, you know who Henry Ford is. You know who Thomas Edison is. And John Burroughs is a very well-known naturalist of the era. And it sounds like it might be like the odd trio, but they all became very good friends. and they embarked on numerous road trips at a time when roads were still kind of not roads.
They were borderline non-existent.
And I mean, the book opens just with its prologue, just talking about these three people and a series of cars. And the one guy is like furiously wrenching on the engine, trying to get it going again. And they managed to get just a little ways down this road, and they go up to this farmhouse, hoping that the owner there at this farmhouse will let them camp there for the night, because they're just getting kind of exhausted. And the owner of the farmhouse is kind of like, you know, who are you bums? Go get away. And the bums are Henry Ford, Thomas Edison, and John Burroughs. And of course, Henry Ford is the one trying to do the wrenching. And it's like, once they knew who they were, that's such a great way to start the book. And it's a very literary book. It's nonfiction. These are things that happen, but it's describing the early days of road tripping when it was a legit adventure. It's like, hey, let's go jump in my 10-year-old car and drive from Detroit to Pittsburgh and get some pizza and then come back. You do that today, it's like, ooh, that's an adventure. That's not an adventure. Driving from Detroit to Chicago in 1912. When there are like no bridges, never mind, like paved roads or anything, that's pretty adventurous. And that's pretty much what this entire book is about. So much information, so much research done here. We're really excited to have Wes Davis join us as a guest. So folks, once again, American Journey on the Road with Henry Ford, Thomas Edison, and John Burroughs. If you have a chance to pick it up, we're going to speak with Mr. Davis here on July 5th. We would love to bring up any questions, anything that you would want to ask. We're really, really excited for that podcast. So we hope you're sticking around here for us.
Yeah. And I will say, we also very, very tentatively have a guest for later on in July. I'm just going to leave it at that for right now because it's still tentative. But another person not from the Motor One crew, not even an auto journalist, just someone with really interesting car stories that we're hoping to get on the show. So
we got some good stuff cooking.
Absolutely. But I think with that, that's going to be our show tonight. But yeah, Brandon next week, Professor Davis following week, and then mystery guest later in the month. So it's going to be fun and exciting. But with that, good afternoon. Well, I'm going to change it. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, or good night. And because of Groove by FBC, our pal in Australia, we love doing the show for you. It's so much fun. I love getting to talk to Smith every week about cars. And it's always really cool when we get to have guests on because, it would shock you the number of people with interesting car stories out there. And it's, even if it's a 5-minute conversation, or this show it'll be a normal length, hour, 15 minutes ish. It's just going to be a lot of fun. So thank you everyone for joining us tonight. We appreciate that you spent the time with us, and with that, bye-bye.
We'll see you. Bye-bye, everybody.